move to the third case for this morning. Wayman versus Ameritech. Make it clear that no response was timely filed. Therefore, unless the panel has any objections.
Time we have an application or situation where a specific date for filing has been set by the court, or is that in this?
I would agree that 5D may not require a specific date for filing has been set by the court. For example, in Foster Anderson, which is cited by my opponent, the court notes that a specific date for filing has been set forth in the order. However, if this panel notes that the order is issued by the lower court, as well as the statement of opinion, you'll find that all the lawyers provided for a review date for the response. And I do believe, if it is not, you have nowhere else to look but Rule 5D. And also, in the case of Lane versus Bittner, which we cited in detail in our brief, that this court noted about 60 years ago in a similar case where a pleading was due on a certain date, that there was no filing requirement other than to be filed in a reasonable time. I'd like to move on to explain why some of the judges would not have been granted if the lower court had in fact considered our response. Evidentiary disputes and well-established legal principles preclude summary judgment here. For example, the evidence in this case cast doubt on Conley's alleged, Mr. Conley, the decision makers, alleged and non-discriminatory reasons for selecting this Wayman.
Termination.
First, Mr. Conley claimed that Ms. Wayman was terminated because Mr. Rosinski selected her. We know that's not true because Mr. Rosinski adamantly denies that he selected Ms. Wayman for termination. The second reason offered by Mr. Conley is the staff rankings. Again, problems. There is even fact regarding whether the staff rankings were really used. Mr. Rosinski stated that he did not know Mr. Rosinski was Ms. Raymond's immediate supervisor, and he stated that he did not know that Ms. Raymond had been terminated based on the staff rankings until I told him in my office in February 2004, almost two and a half years after she'd been terminated. Also, no one else was terminated based on the stack rankings. There's also evidence in the case that the stack rankings themselves may not have been accurate, and the economy may have been aware of this. Finally,
I didn't understand may have been what?
May have been aware that the stack rankings were not accurate. Anyway, Mr. Rosinski testified, given the nature of their business, it was not appropriate barometer in the most informed decisions that ever been made based on such a short period, 3 months. Nor do you recall Mr. Conley ever saying that they were using such a barometer. Additionally,
what kind of period is used generally?
A year, 1 year. SBC also claimed that Ms. Lane was selected because she was weak on dry products. This too is disputed and problematic. For instance, when Ms. Lane questioned Mr. Rosinski regarding Conley's claims about the data product, Mr. Rosinski told Ms. Lane that he actually told Conley, what he actually told Conley was the little issues Ms. Lane may have had regarding data products was negated by her overall performance. And I think this is very important because if this court looks at Shaving versus Upjohn, the court, in that case, the filing security was supposed to file because because he was weakened the record of the singles. However, while the court noted that may have been sort of legitimate music fines, but also noted that based on his overall performance, that was only a minor discrepancy and not enough to warrant summary judgment. Also, finally, after Tommy realized that Mr. Rosinski did not act enough, he did want to claim that he believed that Conley indicated Ms. Raymond. I can look at the court that's very dangerous. Every court is known as Aiden versus Matco. When the decision is based on some subjective other decision makers, federal student must be given. And moreover, Mr. Benson Wilson notes that contrary to Conley's claims, that when Conley asked him who gave him the best ability to go forward the following year, he, Mr. Conley, did not select Ms. Raymond. Based on the foregoing proper reasons offered by FTC and Conley for Ms. Raymond's termination are either false or a minimum of the general issue of a material fact, thereby preserving summary judgment. End of the hearing. Not only that we would be refined on Ms. Raymond based on the issues raised just noted regarding the various reasons the FTC offered to terminating her, there was also FTC's violation of its own policy by placing the two white males in other positions in FTC, even though they were on performance improvement plans. FTC had a policy of placing employees without a performance improvement plan in another position within FTC was prohibited. However, Mr. Christian and Mr. Adams, both white males who FTC said were on PIPs, performance improvement plans, were given a new job with some assistance from Congress, who did not offer capacity information on the disbandment, who did not and never have been on a performance improvement plan. Furthermore, because the discrimination suit against SBC was pending. When the new issue arose for a distribution manager in Illinois, the agency specifically asked Ms. Raymond be hired. However, he was told that she could not be hired because of a pending lawsuit. There also exists a genuine material fact regarding whether Ms. Raymond was replaced by a young white male, Mr. Ben Burke. It is undisputed that Mr. Ben Burke was hired as a dean in Illinois after Ms. Raymond was terminated. It is unclear when the FTC decided to fill Ms. Raymond's position, but it clearly raises the question of whether it was Raymond who terminated her, or it was part of Conley's plan and efforts to purge the workforce of non-whites and females. Additionally, a jury should be allowed to consider the Conley's discriminatory treatment of Ms. Shaver as evidence of discriminatory bias, pretext, and intent. As this court said in Manuel v. City of Chicago, the decision-making treatment of other employees is evidence of pretext, discriminatory intent, and bias. Furthermore, even if this court does not believe that any single piece of evidence I just noted precludes summary judgment, that does not mean the inquiry. As this court has noted on several occasions, including the Johnson versus Aramark, and I quote, "No one piece of evidence may be used for a finding of discrimination, but rather the court must take the facts as a whole." It is clear that if this court reviews the entire record in this case, Ms. Raymond presented sufficient evidence to cast doubt on the SBC's proper reasons and raise genuine issues of material fact regarding the true reasons for discrimination.
Do you think, even though the judge here said he wasn't going to rely on the response because it was filed late, but he in fact did take it into consideration when he wrote his opinion?
Absolutely not. I believe, number one, SBC does make that claim, but I think it's conjecture. And I suggest that the court look at the judge's order and his words. In the order of September 24th, he specifically stated, "I'm not going to consider the response." And in his opinion, I believe on pages 6 and 7, he notes he did not consider our response. And the only issue that he would have noted in sentences when he said neither party raised a new work issue, he could very well have been looking at the pleadings, looking at the complaint, and the answer without at all looking at our response. I think there's absolutely no concrete, substantial, or important evidence in the record that demonstrates that he did, in fact, review our response. In addition to all the factual issues, two legal principles also include some judgment here. Number one, Conley's serious credibility problems. In addition to his claim that Mr. Wilson selected Ms. Raymond, he also claimed, believe it or not, at his deposition, that he did not recall any complaint against anyone who had been rude to customers other than the complaint against Ms. Shaver. That's pretty hard to believe if you look at the letters that Mr. Ryan wrote to Ms. Clinshire. We know that Ms. Clinshire's boss gave the letters to Conley. At the time Conley answered this question, he was in the middle of a criminal litigation in which he was sued personally. It's hard to believe that he didn't remember those letters. 7 years later, Mr. Jeffers is the leader of them. Ms. Crenshaw is the leader of them. I suggest, Mr. Connors is something that is
not telling the truth.
That coupled with his testimony regarding his resistance, as this court noted in Pryor versus Sci-Fi Shaw, if the trial fact may believe that if it's reason for the trial fact to believe that a witness has given misleading or unbelievable testimony, they're allowed to disbelieve all of their testimony. Therefore, given the jury to disregard or disbelieve any of Mr. Connors' testimony, and secondly, as details, a separate great detail in our brief, some of them are often improper because of Connors' clearly demonstrated discriminatory animus toward older and older female workers. I think a separate detail, if the court looks at Shaver versus Upjohn and Day versus Carl Construction, and their progeny, they will conclude that some of them are improper. And my understanding of those cases basically said, we don't need to go for the reasons. Because once discriminatory animus is established, in the case of the decision maker, who is the decision maker here? So we're just thinking about Shaver today. They actually try to imply a certain model to remove from the discriminatory animus in the video from the decision maker. But that's not the case here. Connelly is decision making, and I think we said it out in great detail that he does have a clear demonstrated discriminatory animus against other female workers. Thank you, and I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, Mr. Erkel. Mr. Kunstler?
May it please the Court. My name is John Kinsler on behalf of SBC. The District Court properly granted SBC's summary judgment motion in this matter. Judge Guzman was within his discretion to deny Raymond's late-filed response to summary judgment. Judge Guzman had the discretion to deny Raymond's continued request for extensions of time. Judge Guzman had the discretion to expect that his deadlines would be met. Seventh Circuit has repeatedly upheld District Court's strict enforcement of Local Rule 56.1 and the District Court's decisions to reject late filings, even one-day late filings. Judge Guzman did not abuse his discretion in rejecting Raymond's late filing and ruling on SBC's summary judgment motion without Raymond's response. Raymond failed to prove her race, her sex, and her age claims in this matter. Raymond failed to prove her claims under either a direct or an indirect method of proof. There was no direct evidence here because only the remarks attributed to Conley were stray remarks that were not directed at Raymond, that were not made in Raymond's presence, and it had no bearing on the inclusion of Raymond in the reduction in force. With respect to indirect evidence, the court properly held that Raymond failed to meet a prima facie case because she failed to show that similarly situated employees outside her protected class were treated more favorably or that she demonstrated that she was replaced. The evidence clearly showed that Raymond ranked lower in sales than other DMs on her team during the 3 months prior to the layoff.
Three months is the usual period used to measure performance.
Mr. Connelly is a higher level supervisor, and there was testimony that at his level that was a acceptable standard to look at 3 months that had been used in the past. And the evidence shows that Rosinski said, well, you know, he didn't think that that was such a good idea, but Rosinski was a lower-level supervisor that hadn't been involved in these types of decision-making in the past. At Connelly's level, 3 months was an acceptable number. Rosinski also told Connelly, when asked, that Raymond's data knowledge was weak and that her sales skills were weak. Raymond was ultimately selected, and her position was eliminated. The court held that SBC had established legitimate business reasons for the reduction in force, for the inclusion of Raymond in the reduction in force. And the court also held that Raymond had failed to show that the reasons were a pretext. The court specifically found that the reasons that Conley set out for including her in the reduction in force were actually those reasons that were used. So it was proper for the court to exclude Raymond's response to summary judgment, and the court, in a detailed analysis, considered the evidence presented, considered the testimony and admissions.
I'm suggesting that the court, in fact, did consider the response. What's the basis for that?
I think you can look at 2 points in the opinion by Judge Guzman. One is on page 15 of the opinion, where he stated, there's no evidence that Raymond's sales for those periods were underreported or that the stack rankings for Illinois DMs were inaccurate. This is an argument that was not raised by plaintiff in her This was an argument that was raised by plaintiff in response to the summary judgment motion. It was not raised by plaintiff in any other pleadings. It was not raised in her deposition testimony or in any interrogatory responses. So I think if you look at that page, it's clear that that Judge Guzman had considered the brief in response, had looked at it, and that made its way into his opinion. Also, if you look at page 12 of that opinion by Judge Guzman, he discusses the many rest standard. And again, this is something that was not raised by either party in their briefs on summary judgment. And Judge Guzman correctly notes that neither party raised this argument. So I think you can make the argument that Judge Guzman did consider this brief and it made its way into his opinion.
What difference does it make? It's a de novo standard of review here.
That is correct. It's a de novo standard review with respect to the grant of summary judgment. It's an abuse of discretion standard with respect to his decision not to consider the brief.
Right. So once we decide what the threshold record is, based on either agreeing with or upholding the judge's decision to exclude the summary judgment response as untimely, or disagreeing with that and including it in the record, then we just look at the record ourselves without regard to what the district court looked at.
That's correct. The summary judgment is de novo review. So, again, just in conclusion, I would say that Judge Guzman's order was correct. We would respectfully ask that this court uphold his decision and affirm that decision. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. You have 4 minutes, Mr. Jericho.
Was late. My opponent's argument was late, but that is the issue. If you look at 5D, you got to determine whether it was late. We're not even beginning to try to convince this court that we did not file it after the due date. But the real question is, looking at the rule and looking at this court's precedent, was it late? And I submit that it was not. This court has repeatedly held that 1 or 3 days is reasonable. Also, with respect to the claim about the 3 months versus the year, when you get to that, prior to what this asked by at the deposition on page 8189 of the appendix, prior to the layoff, there was a situation where people were there were 3 months violations for any significant reason, not the 15, no. So prior to this time, and also, I'm not aware of any place in the record where Mr. Connolly said that a different time frame would apply at his level. And that applies to Mr. Connolly's level. He was 2 levels above Mr. Connolly. I think that the real applicable standard is the one cited by Mr. Wazinski, her immediate supervisor, not with his team. And, at a minimum, just one more disputed fact. I submit to this court that, for all the reasons we outlined, as well as the detail in our brief, summary judgment is improper and the lower court must be reversed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jericho. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.